I'm Tanzina Vega, and we're going to end this week on The Takeaway by talking about photography, specifically who's behind the lens. Earlier this week, Vogue magazine came under fire for its August cover issue featuring celebrated gymnast Simone Biles, photographed by Annie Leibovitz. Critics on social media and elsewhere blasted both the choice of photographer and the images themselves, which some say did a disservice to Biles, underscoring the importance of hiring photographers who know how to light and shoot darker skin tones. Meanwhile, another magazine, Vanity Fair, also drew attention this week for its latest cover featuring the actress Viola Davis. The cover was the first in the publication's history to be shot by a Black photographer, Dario Calmesi. Danielle Scruggs is a photo editor at Vox and also a board member of the Authority Collective, a group of women, non-binary, and trans photographers and filmmakers of color. Danielle, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Brent Lewis, photo editor at The New York Times and co-founder of Diversify Photo. Brent, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So Danielle, what were your first thoughts when you saw Annie Leibovitz's photos of Simone Biles?
So my initial reaction was, I know that her aesthetic is a muted palette, muted color tones, but I don't think that she took into account Simone Biles, the fact that, you know, she does have dark brown skin, and you do have to account for that when you are lighting, her. And I also just felt that the photos just weren't, they didn't reflect how compelling and dynamic of a person that Simone Biles is.
Yeah, I mean, Brent, that's a really good point Danielle raises here, because a lot of the critiques were also just about the technical aspects of shooting and editing darker skin tones. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
It comes down to really looking at the experience of folks that people have, because lighting and actually just photographing darker skin tones brings another layer of understanding, another layer of knowing that you need to maybe exposed for a half stop down or whatever it is, or bring in an extra field card or something like that. And you can see that, I don't know if she phoned it in for this one or it was not fully thought of, but whoever was doing the lighting techs on that one just really missed the ball, because it doesn't give that flair. And I know that she's all about her subdued muted tones, but this one was just a little bit too far off of what, you know, we've come to expect.
And I'm wondering, Danielle, and when we think about who gets to shoot whom, do celebrities like Simone often have a say in who shoots them? I mean, are they able to say, look, I want to be photographed by this photographer and not that photographer? I can imagine being told that you're going to be photographed by Annie Leibovitz would be, you know, for a cover like that is a big deal for a celebrity. But then, you know, what happens then? I mean, how much of a say does the subject have?
I guess it depends on who it is. Like, I know, for example, Beyonce specifically requested Tyler Mitchell to photograph her for her Vogue cover. But I also recognize that there are so many moving parts when it comes to magazine photography and producing a shoot like of this nature. So there's the creative director, there's the photo editor, there's the editor in chief, there's Anna Wintour herself, who's the she oversees kind of like all of the creative direction for various Condé Nast outlets. And so I think celebrities do have some power, but there are also so many other factors in that as well.
Well, and that points to the larger issue that we're talking about here, which is just the overall, the overwhelming whiteness of the photography world in general, which is really an extension of the media landscape in general. A lot of us have been talking about, you know, how white our newsrooms are, and photography extends to that. Brent, in terms of, you know, the makeup of many of the folks that Danielle was just saying, you know, you need a whole team of people to do this. There's a lack of diversity in those teams in and of themselves, isn't there?
Oh, by all means. I mean, the thing is that photography in so many ways has not been accessible to people of color. And this is the moments where you see things that happen just like this. If you're not working with a crew that understands it, and you're not working with a photographer that puts the emphasis on making sure that, you know, the people that you're photographing, that the subjects are well-lit and understanding and composed in a way that actually gives that dignity and that respect, you miss these marks. And that's indicative of just photography at this moment right now. We have so many voices out here doing amazing work for magazine covers and for just generally news organization outlets in general, but they're not being pushed to that level. They're not given those same looks that many other white photographers are having. And I feel like that is harming and damaging us to what we're going to be able to see in the future. I think there's been a lot of push now, like shots of Vanity Fair, for like seeing their blind spots and moving forward. But it's a lot. We're still hitting first. We're still hitting a bunch of firsts. Like, it was Dana Scruggs last year for Rolling Stone, a first. Like, how?
No, and that's exactly it. I mean, Danielle, you know, Brent just brought up Vanity Fair. I'm thinking, you know, the Viola Davis cover here, the first time ever shot by a Black photographer, Dario Calamese. What do you make of that, Danielle?
Well, it's ridiculous.
I mean, just the exasperation, I can hear it in your voice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Vanity Fair in its current iteration has been publishing since 1983. And so the fact that it took this long for them to finally hire a Black photographer to photograph the cover, it's not really something that I feel like I can celebrate, because it should not have taken this long at all. And, you know, to Brent's point, that does speak to just how much we need to radically reimagine the photo industry and reimagine, you know, who we see as an expert and who we can see as who can be in charge of these decisions.
And Brent, we've got about a minute left, but I'm just curious, in terms of when you assign photos and photo editing and photo and photographers, do you think about who you're assigning to which type of story?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that's part of what every photo editor has to do. I'm always considerate of who I'm assigned to do what they can bring to it, what their style brings to it, and the understanding, especially in the world of journalism. For me, it just goes that much further. I want to be able to make that bond, that connection, and honestly bring a voice to it that we haven't seen before, bring a way of seeing that we have never like fully understood, we haven't internalized. So much of the history of photography has been seen through the white male gaze, and I want to mix that up as much as I can. So it all goes into what we do.
We are also talking about, I guess this would be somewhat of a success story, the amazing, I say that because I will stand Viola Davis, the amazing Viola Davis on the cover of Vanity Fair's new issue. Danielle, tell us a little bit about Dario Calamese's approach to the cover. What do we know how he approached the cover so far?
He was referencing a really famous photo known as the Scourged Back, where it's a photo of a formerly enslaved man who is showing scars from being whipped. It's from 1863, and it was really widely circulated during the 19th century by abolitionists who are making a case to abolish slavery. And so while the fact that she's wearing indigo is also a reference to indigo being one of the crops that was maintained by enslaved people. So I get the approach, because I know that in New York Times, like, he talked about wanting to make a protest image. But I do have to say that while it is a very striking photo, and I also stand Viola Davis, it is a very striking photo, but I do have to be honest and say that once I figured out what he was referencing, it did change my relationship to the image a little bit.
In so much as?
It just like made me realize that I think we really need to expand our imaginations around how we depict Black people, and in particular Black women, and to get very particular dark-skinned Black women. I think there are, you know, so many other stories and histories and archives that we can pull from and reference when we are depicting Black people. And I do think we all need to challenge ourselves to expand our imaginations around that a little more.
Well, and to that point, Danielle, the collective that you are a part of really attempts to expand who is behind the lens. You're looking at women, non-binary and trans photographers and filmmakers of color. Would it have been different I mean, this is hard to speculate, but if there had been a Black woman behind the lens photographing Viola Davis.
Absolutely. I think so. I think it definitely makes a difference who's behind the lens, because, you know, you're bringing your own history, your own background, your own understanding of another person. And that's not to say that, you know, if you're not Black, you can't do that with other Black people. But we just don't see it enough. We don't see enough, like we don't get enough chances to see different kinds of people behind the lens who can create these images that, you know, live on in media forever, and that like really do make a difference. And like they can either, and you know, the images that people create can either perpetuate harm, or they can do something entirely different and open people's eyes to a different way of seeing. And so I definitely think it makes a big difference who's behind the lens, who's telling the story, and how they're doing that.
And we've talked, I think that's a huge point. And Brent, we talked a little bit about this earlier, just in terms of the team that's necessary. It goes beyond the photographer. There's an entire team of people who are deciding what images are used. And here we're talking about magazines, but you work for my former employer, the New York Times. And there is an entire team of people there, or there are many photographers there, and they're making decisions, or the photo editors are making decisions about what gets placed in one of the biggest and most widely read newspapers and digital and online sites in the world. Brent, tell us about that when it comes to image selection, particularly now when we're at a moment, such a fever pitch in this country for racial justice, for social justice, and a lot of the images that are coming are images of protesters, images of very difficult images in some instances. How is the photo editing process taking place? Are you sending out Black photographers? Does it matter? And what happens when those photos finally get into your hands and then become, and then the decisions start to get made?
Okay, thank you for that question. No, it is a very interesting process at the end of the day. So when it comes to the protests, I'll start there. I didn't do it directly with them this time around. I'm on the business desk. But what it really comes down to, we did, the New York Times and other publications in general, signed a lot of Black photographers to cover these protests. And I think, honestly, there's a gaze in general that I think needs to be seen. There are reasons to hire Black photographers, because there's mundane and nuanced information that you're going to see out there, photos that can be created that I think you just need that little bit of that understanding that you get when you send a Black photographer out there. On top of that, it goes with making sure that the photographers that you send out there are supported, making sure the Black photographers are out there who know that, you know, they look like the protesters that are out there, feel that, yeah, they have the backing of your news organizations. And then from there, it's just making sure they have support to know that, like, they go out, make the images that they see are indicative of this moment, tell the story of this moment, and can give it the historical significance that it needs and deserves. From there, you know, we go back and forth with the photographers. They send us a set of photos, we talk through the photos, and we kind of get this understanding of, like, all right, this is what went down on the ground, I understand and see how that works. And then from there, it goes into the hands of the photo editor. And we're like, all right, cool. What, from everything that we know, from every understanding that we've seen and heard and read, what is indicative of this moment? What puts this moment in perspective for the readers who might not be on the lines of the protest, or might not even be aware of the protest in the way that they are? What tells the story in a holistic way? And that is not done in a silo. That's done with photo editors sometimes taking a lead, but then, you know, you bring in your colleagues because you don't work individually. So I lean over, I'm like, hey, XYZ, what do you think about this edit? How does this work? I might go talk to Megan Lorm and be like, hey, Megan, like, this is what I'm thinking. How does this work? So it's all these little bit of back and forth that go on. So it doesn't happen in this one individual silo. And then it's also like talking with the actual word editors. And understanding the story that much more, and putting together something that is respectful and tells the story of this moment in time in general. And I think, we have seen in the news media and actual, I want to say journalism and all has understood the power of having different voices behind the camera. And it's showing through. And I have fingers crossed and I hope that, this continues because it's been a long path getting here. Like Danielle and I have been like hitting the pavement between our various organizations, but there's been a lot of groundwork laid from people years before we were even born. So I'm hoping this is the catalyst right now.
Brent Lewis is a photo editor at the New York Times and the co-founder of Diversify Photo. And Danielle Scruggs is a photographer and photo editor at Vox. Danielle and Brent, thanks so much for your insights.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.